Doris Edmonds. I'm retired from the faculty at California Lutheran College, where I taught early childhood curriculum and research. I work now as a volunteer for CAN, C-A-A-N, which are the initials for Child Abuse and Neglect in Ventura County, California. Until recently, most of us were content to believe that child abuse was somebody else's problem. But we know now that child abuse is a tragedy that affects us all. Permanent mental and physical damage caused by child abuse can rob a person of the ability to be an independent, productive citizen. Crime, delinquency, drug and alcohol addiction often result when a person has been mistreated as a child. Our states have passed laws providing for mandatory reporting of suspected cases of child abuse, but the need for community follow-up services is great. And that's one reason I'm presenting this today, hoping that maybe some of you might become interested in this project in your own area and volunteer to do what you can for the child abuse agency. Our states have passed laws providing for mandatory reporting of suspected cases of child abuse, but the need for community follow-up services is great. Reporting abuse is simply stating the case. It is up to the individual communities to solve this problem and prevent its repetition. The abused child and family want to be helped, and they can be. CAN is set up to intercept and prevent child abuse. It's helping families to learn how to live together and cope with the crisis. We need to learn the facts about child abuse, support legal and social efforts to combat child abuse and neglect. We all need to be concerned about it. Until the 19th century, the law regarded children solely as the property of their parents. There was no protection for abused children until 1874, when the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, SPCA, went to court on behalf of a child, arguing that the girl could be protected at least by laws forbidding barbaric treatment to animals. Today, the law clearly provides that parents may not beat, starve, or abandon their offspring without triggering state intervention into their lives. What is child abuse? It can be physical, it can be emotional, it can be verbal, or sexual. How many of you have read the story of Dibbs? Good. Dibbs was an abused child, but as far as I know, he was never touched physically, but he was the son of very intellectual, professional parents. His mother was an MD, and his father was a scientist. Everything that Dibbs uttered was put down. Stupid, what did you say that for? They didn't accept him in any way, and they did not show any love whatsoever. They just called him stupid. Well, he wasn't so stupid. He just refused finally to talk because nothing he said seemed to please them. So he didn't say anything. He became completely aphasic. And that started worrying them then. So they called on Virginia Axline, a therapist, to do something about their son. And through her therapy, he eventually began to talk and behave as we normally think of children his age behaving. And when they took his IQ, or when they tested him, he tested over 170, which we know is well over genius level. So here's just the case of parents, even though they were professional people, did not know what to expect of a child that particular age. They expected him to be super kid. And they thought they were being super parents by correcting him constantly. Well, that's just one instance of abuse, of verbal abuse and emotional abuse. The physical abuse can take the form of lashing, bashing, suffocating, head cracking, and scalding. Parents use fists, belts, baseball bats, chemicals, lighted cigarettes. Children can be undernourished, locked out of houses or in closets, abandoned, or sexually abused. In Ventura County, two children were found locked in a room during their whole Christmas vacation without food or attention. Maltreatment of children has been justified for centuries in the name of discipline, education, and to please certain gods. In China, India, and throughout the Orient, deformed children were usually destroyed at birth. The Greeks, Romans, and many others killed their weak or deformed infants in the vain hope that only the strong would survive. The methods used in killing children have not changed much through history. Blood is rarely shed. They're commonly drowned, smothered, strangulated, buried alive, burnt, and beaten to death. In the 18th and 19th century, the machine age led to other forms of abuse, and few children survived working because children were worked 16 hours at a time. They were starved and beaten on the job. Irons were sometimes put on their ankles, and they were dipped headfirst in vats of cold water to just keep them awake. Sexual abuse of children is another facet of the child battering problem. All societies prohibit adult child sex. In our society, this taboo is violated fairly often. One in every 5 girls. One in every 11 boys. Peak vulnerability is 7 years of age. It's a popular belief that abusers are sexually frustrated old men loitering in public parks or outside schoolyards and luring children by offers of candy or money. This is not true. Most abusers are well known by their victims. The average age of the abuser is 31 years of age, the over 50 age group only a tiny fraction, and most frequent location is the home. Only 11% is involved in physical abuse of the sexually abused children. Most children's sexual experience involve encounters with fondlers and exhibitionists. Half of the girls' experiences are with family members. Only 17% of the boys' experiences are with family members, and 70% with relatives and acquaintances. Only 4% of the experiences reported by girls involve intercourse. During our training period, a group of people involved with incest in their families came to speak to us. I thought it was terrifically courageous of them to be so open, but One of the things they're trying to do is do what they can to prevent this from happening to other people, and also to act as therapists for people who have gotten themselves into this same situation. So they meet regularly with people who have newly been incarcerated for this offense. And I was really shocked when these people sat talking about how they happened to get into the situation. One father was an alcoholic, and he blamed his alcoholism on his the violation of his daughter. But they say very few are alcoholics. A good portion of them have just become too loving with their daughter and didn't know when to stop. And they caution mothers to be aware of the signals in their own homes, because it's the mothers who are blamed in many of the cases, that they are ignorant, they don't want to stop it, they ignore it. And usually one child is selected in the family who gets all the attention, all the favors, and this is one of the signals. Of course, there's no physical, so-called physical harm or abuse, that is, that comes to these daughters. And so many of the times, as it was with one of these fathers who was there, he's a highly respected citizen in the community, very successful businessman, but the kind of person whom his daughter adored and just couldn't believe that he would do anything that wasn't okay. Another case was a stepfather and his stepdaughter. It was interesting, one of the people in our group asked the wife of the man who had become too affectionate with his daughter, how she got over it. She says, "I'm not over it." But yet they were working to keep that family together, because he's the wage earner, and they often take the daughter out of the family rather than the father out of the family for a period until he undergoes therapy. They put him in jail over the weekend so he can work at his job during the week. But everything is done, everything possible is done to keep that family together. The American Humane Society Association estimates 200,000 to 300,000 of female child molestation in the United States there are that many cases per year, 200,000 to 300,000 cases of child molestation, with at least 5,000 cases of father-daughter incest. Estimated 50,000 father-daughter incest cases reported annually nationwide. Offenders are not generally impulsive, raving sex maniacs or psychopaths. At this time, all sexual offenders cannot be helped to change, but some can. Henny Guerretto, director of the Child Sexual Abuse Treatment Program in San Jose, California, reports successful rehabilitation in over 90% of the families treated. Some children act in ways that actively encourage adults to approach them sexually. They may be at odds with their parents, seeking attention and affection, or extending the role of an absent mother. It is uncommon for women to sexually abuse children, but women end up physically abusing children more often than men do. Incest is more frequent than sexual abuse and is different. It involves mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, grandparents, aunts, and uncles. It is most often a symptom of severe problems in marriage.
family, and life adjustment. It includes intercourse. Families of poorly educated mothers manifest almost all the daughter incest. When mothers do not model self-protective behaviors, do not provide daughters with information, or do not adequately supervise them, sexual abuse is more likely to occur. In father-daughter incest, many offenders really are stepfathers. Most victims may not understand sexual like adults, but they know the activity is different, taboo, or should not be mentioned. 1 million American children are abused or neglected yearly. Between 2,000 and 5,000 die from abuse. Approximately 250,000 annually are permanently injured for life from being maltreated. In California alone, 55,000 cases are reported yearly to child protective agencies. In 95% of the cases, child abuse involves the parents. Foster parents, 10 to 15% of this group. Mothers are the major abusers. Fathers most frequently involved in sexual abuse of the daughters. Siblings, less than 1% of cases. Babysitters, in 4% of cases. Abuse is second only to true accidents as a cause of death in young children. 1,750 families were investigated for abuse and neglect in 1978 in Ventura County. 1,630 were involved in court actions. 950 children became dependents of the court in 1977-78. Half of these were placed in foster homes at a monthly cost of $55,000. Average cost per child is $2,868 per year. Average stay in a foster home is 4 years. Average cost of processing one child through the juvenile court system is $1,300. Who are the abusers? Abusers are from all walks of life. Higher incidences of abuse are reported in minority and low-income families. Stress factors are higher with low-income parents unable to afford relief that might be provided by babysitters, trips, etc. These families also have more contact with reporting agencies. The number of child abusers who are psychotic or psychopathic is small. Abusing parents often were abused as children. This is a very important thing to remember. They are either suffering from their own childhoods or simply do not understand the needs and capabilities of the children. It's so important that parents understand the natural development of a child. What can be expected of a two-year-old? Two-year-olds are one of the most abused ages, because they're going through that independent stage, which is perfectly natural and should take place. If they don't start saying no and want to use their own ideas rather than their parents at the age of two, that's cause for alarm. Not a stubborn, negative two-year-old. They are healthy and perfectly normal, but when you don't know that, those are the people who are apt to abuse their child. When he says no, they're going to make him or else, you know. So one of the jobs that I'll probably have when I go back now will be to teach parenting groups. We teach parenting groups at the Home for Unwed Mothers. We teach parenting to people who have been incarcerated for abusing their children. One of the things they are sentenced to is to take a course in parenting for a certain length of time. And also to talk to children in the schools to tell them what to avoid, how not to get their parents angry, when it's a good idea to talk to mother about something that they want or they want to talk to them, and not to accost their parents when their parents seem to be upset about something else. Ways that they can avoid parent abuse, and also the things to watch out for when it comes to sexual abuse. What signs, what are good feelings and what are dangerous feelings or touchings. Abusing parents often were abused themselves, as I said before, and that is one of the things they want to stop, is that cycle of abuse from generation to generation. They might be, there are different causes. They may be depressed or anxious about something. They may be having marital difficulties. They may be immature. They may be incompetent or unreliable, hostile in nature, short-tempered, abusing alcohol or drugs, or lacking self-confidence. If parents can be made aware of their shortcomings and realize that they can't control their feelings, they are given this hotline to call, and a therapist, or not necessarily a therapist, but a volunteer, will be glad to talk to them, listen to them, and if necessary, come out to their home. Maybe a mother really just needs some relief from parenting for a little bit to get hold of herself. I know one of the presenters I was listening to, she was talking to a class of seniors in high school about child abuse. She said she went into this as a volunteer because she had been abused as a child. She had been a subject of incest, or an object of incest, I should say. And she said that she had an 11-year-old baby and could remember the time when it just wouldn't stop crying. She said, "I was ready to throw it against the wall," which happens to a lot of babies. And she said, "I realized that I was getting to the point where I could not control myself. So I just..." Fortunately, her husband was at home, so she says, "I just quickly handed my baby to my husband and left for 2 hours until I cooled off." Many times, children are taken out of a home and put in a cool home, they call it, for 24 hours until everybody cools down. One of the little girls that was in the senior class said that she was sent to a cool home once. When the presenter asked if there was anyone in the class who had been abused, she didn't raise her hand. But then when she said she'd been in a cool home, she asked, "Well, what was the reason?" Well, she said, "My mother got after me with a baseball bat, but she said I deserved it." And this is the common reaction of children. They feel that the punishment that has been inflicted upon them by their parents, they have earned by their misbehavior. They'll blame themselves every time and protect their parents. We were shown a film of child abuse. This little girl had been, her mother came home and she hadn't cleaned her room as she had been asked to. And her mother just started beating her until her arm was broken. She had, her eye was swelled up, and when she was interviewed later, both she and her mother were examined, and she said, "Well, I didn't clean my room. My mother had to punish me." And when the mother was spoken to about her feelings and her background, she said that her father had had a terrible temper and had abused her as a child. She called him a monster. And then the therapist says, did you feel like a monster when you abused your little girl? And the little girl was maybe 11, 12 years old. And of course, that's, looking back on it, she felt like she had been a monster. Usually only one parent actually attacks the infant or the child. The other parent nearly always contributes by accepting and approving it. Following the attack, some parents may have a righteous attitude. Well, I showed him. Or be filled with remorse. The infant may contribute innocently to the attack by being an unwanted baby, or too active and aggressive, fussy, crying, difficult to comfort. And one mother suggested that the baby reminded her of her mother-in-law. So she identified her with someone else that she'd like to punish. Abusive parents strike out in a rage, resentment, or sheer ignorance. Abusive acts toward children are a symptom of deep conflict. Fines or jails are unlikely to rehabilitate the child abuser. The parents need help to feel good about themselves. They need support and comfort. That's why that hotline is so valuable, because if they have that number, they can call a listener, and that's what it really amounts to. Somebody who will listen and listen and listen. And I've talked to, I won't be answering the hotline because I do not have a background in social service nor in nursing. And I think in order to feel at home in somebody else's home, coming in and telling them how to do things, you almost need a background of that sort. Instead, I'm a teacher, so I feel that my my expertise is best in the area of communicating and informing the public of what they can do and what their duties are, and also informing the public, like I am informing you, of the statistics. It was difficult for me to believe these statistics the first time I heard them. They need friends, someone on whom they lean, and sometimes they become almost too much attached to the volunteer, and they abuse the volunteer by expecting them to come in and clean their house and do chores that they themselves have neglected doing. But then you have to know how to handle that kind of a case. But they can, in every case, help find resources that will help them in their particular situation. They need understanding, not criticism. They wouldn't be calling in if they didn't feel guilty about what they had done. We all need to be aware of signs of child abuse. For instance, if you notice a child with bruise marks that are all different colors, you know, maybe a yellow one, a purple one, a green one, you know that those bruise marks have been given at different times. It wasn't just one, he fell off the tricycle or fell out of bed, but rather he has been abused over and over and over again.
Oftentimes, a child whose appearance is just neglected, this could be a sign of abuse, especially neglect by maybe an alcoholic mother or father. And if there's disruptive behavior, for instance, in the classroom, the teacher is obligated to really investigate and find out what is going on at home. In fact, you're compelled by law, if you are a professional who works with children, doctors, teachers, social workers, whatever, you are compelled by law to report it. You report it to either the child abuse agency or directly to the police. The police will usually take a volunteer with him, or the volunteer will usually take a police with him to visit that particular home. And that person who is disrupting, for instance, this is a minor case, but I had a little four-year-old who came to my lab stool with his fist clenched every Monday morning, ready to strike out at anybody who came in his way. And so I decided that there must be something going on at home over the weekend that caused him to come in and have all these pent-up feelings that he was giving vent to after he got to nursery school. So I had a visit with his parents. I just asked him over to my home one afternoon so we could talk. And I asked the father if they were both well educated. Both had master's degrees. They had both been teachers. But you see, they wanted a perfect child. And the father said, well, you know, he's all we've got, and we've got to do a good job with him. We'll talk about parents who try to be perfect tomorrow and what a problem they are. They want perfect children, and they want to be perfect parents, and they really botch things up. Well, this child home was certainly not designed for a child. They had new furniture. They built a brand new home. They had freshly seeded lawn. The father had no time to play with his son because he was busy making cabinets, and he let the boy come down and watch him. But you could see that that child had no outlet whatsoever. He said, every day when he leaves for school, I say, now, Mark, you be a good boy. And I said, do me a favor. Next time you leave, you say, Mark, have fun today. That's why he was so upset. To me, that's abuse. It's emotional abuse. A big, healthy kid like Mark has to have a physical outlet. He has to have emotional outlets. He has to have outlets like crazy at that age. Or he's going to get them so pent up inside of him that he is going to hurt somebody. Our pastor lives just a couple of houses away from him, and he said, I talked to him about Mark because I thought he might give me some insights as far as the home was concerned. He said, well, all I know is that they have a new yard and a new house, and Mark comes over here to our house, and we just hate to see him coming. After I talked to the parents and had pointed out that Mark needed some outlets, he needed his dad to play with him, he needed his dad to really talk to him. I said, you cut him off now, and you're not going to be able to communicate with him when he becomes a teenager, and then it's going to be very, very important. And I asked the mother if she let Mark make any decisions. She said, a four-year-old make decisions. What would you expect him, kind of a decision would you have him to make? I said, well, let him enter into the family conversation. Put his school clothes in one place. Let him pick what he wants to wear to school. Well, it has a happy ending because the pastor came up to me a few weeks later and he said, what in the world did you say to Mark's parents? And I explained in brief what I had talked about, and he said, well, we love to have Mark over now. He's a different boy. They just had to understand the developmental stage of a four-year-old. And that's the problem. We need to educate parents so that they don't expect unrealistic actions from a child at any age. It's up to us as professionals who work with children other than in the home to be watching for this type of thing. Oh, I could reiterate all kinds of stories about how children come to me. One parent came and said, Mary Jane, she said, it's either your school or a psychiatrist. She said her brother has been under the care of a psychiatrist. He's 8 years old, Mary Jane is getting to that point. I said, why do you say that? Well, she throws tantrums every day. And I said, what usually sparks a tantrum? Well, if I give her a green spoon instead of a pink spoon to eat her lunch, she throws a tantrum. I said, why isn't she setting the table? I hadn't thought of that. I said, and when Mary Jane came, she was a leader. She was the one who had to clean the tables and wait on me hand and foot and help manage all the children in the class. She had to have that out. She had this leadership drive that had to be satisfied, and it wasn't being satisfied at home. So she just would throw a tantrum when she couldn't do a few things on her own. And the mother called me from time to time to say how Mary Jane had progressed. She was so proud of her, and she called when she stopped biting her fingernails. She called when the tantrums had gotten down to one a week. And then the most happy call I got from her was after she had taken her to kindergarten roundup. She said, Mary Jane asked me if she could have the money to pay so that I didn't have to stand in line with her. She said, after all, this is the insurance money she had to pay. She said, after all, you're not the one who's being enrolled in kindergarten, I am. Well, her mother said, I let her do it by herself, and she's the only kid in line that didn't have a mother. But she had caught on to hear, this is the way my child is. I'm going to accept my child the way she is. I'm going to give her outlets. I'm going and she observed her in the backyard. She said, of course, she's the one who's organizing all the games, all the kids in the neighborhood. And, you know, that is the problem. We often can understand the child who is just like us. Of course, sometimes that child is the one who irks us the most, too. We see the problems that this gal or guy is going to get into because they're just like a chip off the old block. So there's that side of it. But watching the child, finding out what his strong suits are, and undergirding him, giving him outlets, this will save his skin and our temper. There are other signs that we look for too, and of course neglected appearance, that could well be a child of an alcoholic. Disruptive behavior, as I mentioned with Mark, that was a sign to me that something was going on at home that needed to be stopped. Before I could just see Mark becoming a belligerent teenager he could end up in criminal court just because he had that drive that they weren't appreciating. His dad said, you know, when I put him to bed one night and was going to listen to his prayers, he said to me, do you love me, Daddy? Even when I'm naughty? He said, God, I know God does. Mrs. Edmund said so, and she does too. How about you? He had just felt that everything he did was wrong, so he just came to the logical conclusion, my daddy doesn't love me. but he wanted to hear it from his dad that he did love him. Then there's the passive kind of child. He doesn't strike out, but he sits and is withdrawn. He's afraid to mix with the children, but he's obviously a very, very unhappy child. We need to look into that family too. And these parents who are super critical, like Gibbs' parents, couldn't do anything right. I remember one time we were camping next to a family. I didn't see the mother around, but there were a couple of boys and a girl and their father in camp. And the father kept twitching the girl's legs all the time, for every little thing. He had this stick and seemed to delight him to make her miserable. And I couldn't see that she was doing anything out of order. I didn't know what to do. I knew I had to do something to stop it. So I finally said to Rudy, "I think that man's mentally ill." And I said it loud enough so he could hear it. There's no more abusing after that. But I don't know that that was such a good way to do it. We have to be careful that we don't make them mad, you know, when we interfere with that type of a situation. I'm sure you've seen it in the grocery stores. Or at the market. I remember one time when we first moved out to California, I was volunteer at the state hospital working with autistic and aphasic preschoolers. Well, they weren't, of course they were all preschoolers because none of them were going to school, but they were from the age of 3 to 8. And I often thought, oh, if parents with normal children just could come with me one morning and observe these silent children, they depreciate their own, no matter how active they are. Well, I was sitting in the market there where they had flower beds and they had little fences around made of stone. They were wide enough for a child to walk on. This one little child just was having the best time just running around on the edge of that flower bed. She wasn't hurting anyone. She was about 2 or 3. And the mother jerked her off of there and scolded her for doing this. And I thought, oh, she should be so thankful that her little child can run around on that wall. And doesn't she know that when they're that age, they have to keep moving? Child abusers may be arrested, prosecuted, fined, imprisoned, or instructed to take part in rehabilitation programs. The majority of child abuse cases come to the attention of the police and are reported by neighbors, relatives, doctors, teachers, agencies. We should never hesitate to report a case of suspected child abuse. You don't have to be sure that they really are abusing their child, but if you suspect it, you should report it. And then they'll find, the authorities will find out whether it's actually happening in that home or not.